Word of mouth.
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 This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. For alcoholics, addicts, and people in recovery, the holiday season is a kind of Bermuda Triangle. Those fizzy days of parties and celebration between Thanksgiving, Christmas, and New Year's can plunge even the moderate drinker into a sea of overindulgence. Then on January 1 comes the vow to quit. It is a challenge for anyone, and one that writers from the Roman philosopher Seneca to notorious drinkers like Raymond Carver and Ernest Hemingway have struggled with, some more successfully than others. Neil Steinberg, a columnist for the Chicago Sun-Times, and Sarah Bader, the creator of the Quotenick website, compile the experience of writers and artists from William Shakespeare to David Foster Wallace to illuminate the process of becoming sober in a new anthology. It's called Out of the Wreck I Rise, a literary companion to recovery. And Neil Steinberg is with us from WBEZ in Chicago. Neil, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thank you, Virginia. Nice to be here.
Now, you read a memoir a couple years ago about bottoming out and getting sober. It was called Drunkard, A Hard Drinking Life. Mm-hmm. Did you look to writers to get you through it?
Absolutely. Recovery can be very confusing. You're lost and alone in this situation, and you want something to sort of guide you. And I remember when I was first in recovery, I was looking to things, songs a lot. There's a wonderful Sarah McLachlan song called Fallen. Which is sort of it was an anthem for me, and there was a line in it it was a simple line, better I should know. And because when you're finding out all these terrible things about yourself and this addiction that you have and you have to master, and you're thinking, oh, why can't I go back? Why can't I just ignore this? And that one line, better I should know, you know, it just reminded me that these are facts and I have to kind of go with it. And that was the genesis of this book, was, you know, I like literature, I like to read, and I would stumble across things that were powerful to me. In Drunkard, I happened to be reading my kid the Aeneid. I would read things out loud. And when I got arrested and went into rehab, the scene I was reading him was where Aeneas is on the island of Circe, where her brew turns men into pigs. And it's kind of hard not to be reading that and having it going on in your life and not see a resonance. And there's a quote in the book from the Aeneid where I say, basically, gather up your courage again and tuna sidi malus, yield not to evils. Now, if you're feeling tempted, if you're going to a party where everyone's drinking but you, it's sort of helpful to say to yourself, yield not to evil, but go forth all the more strong, boldly to face it. I mean, that's a plan. And somehow it helps to have this 2,000-year-old piece of literature telling you that. At least it helped me, and I thought maybe it would help other people.
So don't drink from Circe's cup.
Right, exactly. I mean, this is the thing. The book begins where alcohol is still fun. You know, the opening quote is, all roads lead to the tavern. And I wanted to show people, because that's where your recovery begins. You're in the middle of this, and it's your life. It's what you do. And, people who are sober, it seems that like a zombie cult. It's some other world that has nothing to do with you. And so that's why it was important to me to have kind of started in the middle of the party, which is where this usually starts. And then things slowly go wrong. I mean, the what I'm most proud of the book is it's not so much an anthology as it's a narrative. These quotes are sort of mortised together to form a story. It's, you know, and not only that, but I kind of, you know, people think of as negative as addiction can be, they also view it as romantic. You know, Keith Richards and a heroin addict and all that sort of stuff. There's an edge to it. And I try to argue, Sarah and I argue in this book, that recovery is also heroic, that it's the path of a hero, that you're doing this very difficult thing. You know, it's like climbing a mountain. And there's a lot of mountain imagery in it, a lot of water imagery, a lot of mazes and that sort of thing.
Yeah, you have this sort of boozy start to it. Aeneas Nin praising the promise of a martini, Samuel Johnson on the freedom of a tavern. So you begin with the glory of drinking, but then follow the path that many people go through, kind of circling the drain, overcoming denial, taking the plunge in some way, rehab, therapy, AA. There are entries here from John Cheever's journal on how his drinking affected his life and creative life. Ernest Hemingway's letters.
Talking about these people become almost like characters. You know, Cheever was very eloquent and very, and to show you how things kind of click together, there's a moment in his journal where he was saying, it started with this speck of unease, and he was late to a train, and he met a friend for lunch and had a few more cocktails, and the day sort of started to dissolve, and he ran into an old friend's wife and did something obscene, and he woke up the next day and he wanted to kill himself, and he tried to look back at what the problem, what had started it, and it was just a speck. And then the next quote is from Emily Dickinson from a letter from 75 years earlier where she says, it's the speck that forms the cloud, that causes the storm, that wrecks the ship children, but nobody fears a speck. Hmm. Do you see how they kind of talk to each other?
Yes.
And when I put those two quotes together, I could almost hear them click. I mean, a lot of it is obvious, but some of it are things you may not have thought of. Like there's a chapter on time. Hmm. Time is very important in recovery because you have to do the right thing now and today and tomorrow and next week and next year and sort of master. That's why people count their months in the beginning and count their years. And the time, each chapter starts with a quote and is named for the quote. So the time chapter is called Wait. And this is a wonderful Galway Connell a poem called Wait, where he's saying wait a little, you know, and that's a very important skill in recovery is you really want to go have a drink right now, but you learn that if you just wait, that desire will pass and you'll be in a better position than had you run out and had that drink.
Can you read from that poem? It's just so lovely. Is this where he talks about awakening
absolutely.
To the world?
It's mm-hmm. called Wait for Now. Distrust everything if you have to, but trust the hours. Haven't they carried you everywhere up to now? Personal events will become interesting again. Hair will become interesting. Pain will become interesting. Buds that open out of season will become interesting. And he basically says, and you should be there to experience it and to see it. And the poem ends like this. Wait. Don't go too early. You're tired, but everyone's tired. But no one is tired enough. Only wait a little and listen. Music of hair. Music of pain. Music of looms weaving all of our loves again. Be there to hear it.
Neil Steinberg is with us. He's co-author of Out of the Wreck I Rise. It's a collection of writers, artists, and thinkers on addiction and recovery and essays by the authors about their experience of recovery. You talked about the addiction as illness, and there is a John Berryman quote in the book. Willpower is nothing. Morals is nothing. Lord, this is illness. And I think people understand addiction much more than they did when he killed himself in 1972. But is there still, Neil, a moral component or maybe a judgment of weakness for people who are suffering from addiction?
Absolutely. I mean, that's why people can be so private about this. It's where cancer was 50 years ago. You used to be able to not say it because you were ashamed. And a lot of people are ashamed to talk about this, to say, I'm an alcoholic, I have this problem. And, you know, I was lucky in the sense that my rehab was so public, being a columnist for the Chicago Sun-Times. I remember checking into the hospital, and then the nurse said, well, of course, your being here is completely confidential. And I said, well, you know, my being here is in the New York Post this morning. So the confidentiality thing, it's not an issue for me. And at the time, it was horrible, but it seemed to be a great blessing, too, because it was, you know, people would say, well, aren't you ashamed to talk about this? And I'd say, you know, I wasn't ashamed to be this notorious sponge reeling around town, soaking up every drop of booze I could get my hands on. Why would I be ashamed that I got better, that I'm trying to help other people get better? I mean, there are many wonderful things about recovery. It really is. It's not the doom. See, the thing is, when you're a drinker, when you're an addict, that's your world. It's who you are. It's what you love. It's what you do. And you have to replace it with something else. And that's what these quotes are really, I mean, you know, poetry is a wonderful thing. And people think of it as all fey and, you know, nothing, something frilly. And it's not. These are powerful things. We have 8 Louise Glick poems in this. And Louise Glick is sort of like this angry, cheesed off septuagenarian. And they're, it's like hitting something with a hammer to read her words.
Well, being an artist, and you have to have some ego, some will, to believe that you have something to say. But you in the book present confronting addiction as kind of suspending that ego and the will, you know, to not see yourself as so distinct or unique, but you're just another alcoholic. There's a quote from Jonathan Franzen, but nothing disturbs the feeling of specialness like the presence of other human beings feeling identically special. So why, Neil, is this so essential to the process, especially for someone like a writer, like yourself?
Well, I mean, and that's something which they hit on in AA very much, is that in your addiction, you are the same. And, you know, a person who's an addict, they tend to kind of want to create a realm of exception for themselves. No, I'm not. I'm, it's only three drinks, whatever. They kind of have, they argue it, and they use their personality to try to push it back. And a big word in recovery is acceptance. You have to say, I have this problem. I am like these other people. I mean, that's the glory of going to AA meetings is you go, you show up and you're not an alcoholic. You're just going because your wife's making you. And you listen to these people talking about themselves. And you know, it's a syllogism. Is it syllogism? A equals B? In other words, where you say, these people are obviously alcoholics, A. B, I'm just like them. C, I must be an alcoholic too. So it's you have to kind of be led to the path there. And I don't know if that's helpful or not.
Well, I think that's such an interesting thing with people who make the leap. I think that's the way you put it in the book. There's a whole segment on taking that leap. And breaking that cycle means overcoming denial. Jack London couldn't do it. He was convinced he'd mastered John Barleycorn. Raymond Carver did make it. John Cheever did in AA, Alcoholics Anonymous, which he initially dismissed as a bunch of Christers. Is there any clue as to why some are able to get it and stay sober while others are not? You know, either from their writing or your observation.
I think the acceptance that I mentioned, and with Jack London's a fascinating example, because here's a guy who was drinking continually. And he wrote a memoir of it called John Barleycorn that we use in the book. And he basically is able to stop drinking for a week on an ocean voyage, and he uses this to announce that he can't be an alcoholic because he could stop for a week, and therefore he's okay, and he drinks himself to death at it by age 40. And so I do think it's a matter of whether you can honestly look at yourself and what you're doing. And that's why where these writers come in so clearly, you know, so importantly, because to be a good writer, you have to write honestly. You have to look at things clearly. You have to state it boldly. And a lot of these things are stated in a way that I'd never seen them stated before. I didn't quite, and that's really, again, how the book came to be. I'd be reading Seneca, and Seneca would be talking about what disease really is. Hmm. And I'd realize, oh, my God, he's talking about booze. There's a quote from Petrarch in here, Climbing Mount Ventoux, where he's basically talking about his view towards sin, where he's saying, the things I love, I don't love. No, I'm lying. I actually do love them, but I love them in this covert way that I'm fighting against. And, it's a perfect summation for your attitude towards booze or towards your addictive substance, where you still love the thing, but you're rebelling against that love. And I didn't quite, and again, hopefully these quotes, it's not just things that are powerful and you can carry in your pocket and pull out and help you, but things that will help understand that once you read them, you'll go, yes, that's exactly it.
Hmm. Well, we do move from the harrowing, we've got Ernest Hemingway. This is from an unpublished draft of The Sun Also Rises. There was nothing to do but drink. Each day became a replica of the day before. This kind of relentlessness to stories of people like Raymond Carver, who famously, he's a real inspiration, I think, here in this narrative, that he got the gravy, recovery, the gravy. What did that mean for him? When as an artist and a writer, so much of their identity is tied up in that. So what happens when you've changed and become someone else, a new person, as one of the writers?
That Carver poem, we call the last chapter Gravy, and it's a beautiful poem that he wrote about the last 10 years of his life. Let me read a little bit of it, the beginning of it to you, because it sort of sums it up. It begins, no other word will do, for that's what it was, gravy. Gravy these past 10 years, alive, sober, working, loving, and being loved by a good woman. 11 years ago, he was told he had 6 months to live at the rate he was going, and he was going nowhere but down. So he changed his ways somehow. And that's really what the book is about. You can change. You can do things differently. You can be a different person. It is possible. Other people have done it, and you can too.
Neil Steinberg, Chicago Sun-Times columnist, memoirist, and co-author with Sarah Bader of Out of the Wreck I Rise, A Literary Companion to Recovery. Neil, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Virginia, it was a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
There's much more on the book at our website, wordofmouthradio.org.